Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Widdicombe.
Welcome to Parents in Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or hopefully how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice, and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because, let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing. This episode is brought to you by National Rail.
Rob, you'll never guess where I went for a cheeky weekend break with the family recently.
Stiff Neck Central?
I don't need a train to go there. Every day is Stiff Neck Central in this house. No, we went on a lovely trip back to the motherland, Devon.
Very nice. How was the drive down?
Non-existent, mate. It was a relaxing train journey all the way from it.
Get closer to the people, places and things you love by train. Nothing beats being there.
This episode is brought to you by Slack. With Slack, you can bring all your people and tools together in one place. It's your digital HQ, where you can increase productivity, enable flexibility, and automate workflows. Plus, Slack is full of game-changing features, like huddles for quick check-ins, or Slack Connect, which helps you connect with partners inside and outside of your company. Slack, where the future works. Get started at slack.com/DHQ.
Hello, you're listening to Parenting Hell with...
Lexi, can you say Rob?
Rob.
Beckett.
Beckett.
And can you say Josh?
Josh.
Widdicombe.
Widdicombe.
No.
And can you say Uncle?
Uncle.
Mike.
Mike.
Oh! Nepotism.
There we go. Tell you what I like there. It's because I can see the recording. I can see it. I thought there's something more here. There's more to come.
So, Uncle Mike. So, I thought, Michael, that you're not on a mic, so you can shout. But I thought it was always Michael, not Mike. But you let the kids call you Mike.
I let the kids and one of my sisters abbreviate, but no one else.
No one else is like Michael. Because when I first met Michael, he wouldn't let me call him Mike. But now I know there is a weakness there, and that is family.
Hi, Rob and Josh. This is our
Isla White.
Lexi, who's 27 months old. As you can probably guess, she is also the niece of producer Michael. We all find it a bit weird people talking about his sexy voice on the podcast. Love the show. Kat, Sommer and Lexi. There we go.
Nice.
Very nice. I'm going to take my headphones. We're doing this face-to-face again, aren't we?
Yeah, I know. We can't get enough of each other.
Yeah,
Our schedules have been very busy, haven't they? So yeah. It's good to be in town together.
Yeah, I like it.
Because we've not been at home by our laptops. But most importantly, we haven't caught up on this. Birthday party. 5-year-old's, your daughter's birthday party.
This is recorded the morning, the day after.
Yes.
So, huge success, I'd say.
Lovely stuff.
From the jaws of defeat.
Oh, what happened?
Well,
there wasn't, you didn't have an entertainer.
We got an entertainer.
Yep.
We got, the things we had, room above a pub.
Yes. Children.
Children. An entertainer. We had makeup, what's it called? Face paint. Just makeup.
Just, yeah, like, look, girls, I think you need to put a bit of effort in. It is a 5-year-old party.
Yeah, come on. Come on, a bit of slap, for God's sake.
Yeah, don't worry, lads. The boys just got to football.
Yeah.
It's quite an old-school wedding.
Yeah, it was.
Wedding birthday.
Yeah. We also had a craft station.
Oh.
That I thought, no one's going to go with this, and it was bloody popular.
Was it?
Little girls, mate. They loved crafts. The crafts.
What about the boys? Did the boys craft?
Boys in craft. It was mainly the girls that crafted.
The crafted.
We had a slight incident with a couple of the boys.
What?
They stole a naked bar from the bag of one of the other parents. So I had to go up to a mum from my daughter's new school.
It's that sort of middle class Fagin.
Who I barely knew.
Pick a pocket or two.
Yeah,
okay. I've got a new a naked bar and some coconut water.
Yes, I barely know this mum. You know, obviously.
But that's pricey, it's about 3 quid a bar.
I had to go up to her and go, do you have a gold bag? And she said, yes. And I said, I'm afraid. And I maybe overplayed it because she looked like I was about to give some really bad news. So actually, when I said, I'm afraid a boy's stolen your naked bar, She was pleasantly relieved, if yeah. I'm honest with you.
The bag's still there, but...
The bag's still there, but the naked bars. Not long for this world.
What was the food situation at the party for the kids?
So, we did... the pub let us cater ourselves.
Yeah.
I made pizzas at home and we did them.
Also, you cooked pizzas at home and brought them in?
Yeah. Pizzas, sandwiches, pom bears.
Classic.
Absolute classic.
The pom bears must be thinking, how do we break through to adults?
They're a good crisp. They are a good crisp.
They've got to do something to get there.
I think it's the bear. The bear is the issue. No adult wants to buy a bear-shaped crisp.
Or they make the bear bigger.
Yeah.
And they're like Dorito size.
Yeah, because it's a good crisp.
I think they're underrated.
There's this implication that they're the kind of okay face of crisps for kids.
I wonder
what's going on, how they've managed to create that kind of image. They're basically a health snack.
You can't give McCoy's to like a 1 year old.
No.
Imagine giving Flame Steak Ridge, whatever they're called. I love a McCoy's.
No, nothing, no shade.
I love McCoy's, but you can't give McCoy's to children, can you? They're like mental. Imagine cheese and onion McCoy. This kid just pumping it back like a lorry driver.
It was a success.
And can I ask a question?
Yeah.
The entertainer arrives.
Yeah.
She's just been booked for a party.
Yeah.
Does she recognise you?
Well, I wasn't the one dealing with her mainly.
Is this a high-pressure gig for a kids entertainer? Because it's going to be spoken on
Well, that's interesting. She was young, so I don't think she'd be aware of this podcast because she was probably in her early 20s.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. She did some good magic.
Yeah.
We all enjoyed it.
It was good.
It went well. There was a bit... She had a backdrop, right? And she put it up, and then everyone was sat waiting, and she was behind the backdrop getting changed. And she was getting changed. She went on a couple of minutes after she was due on, which was fine. But it did give the feeling...
So she was late?
No, she wasn't late.
All right.
She wasn't late.
Just saying, you're throwing her under the bus. This young kid trying to bake her way in the world, you're slagging her off. She's on the biggest podcast in the country.
I'm not on the rest of his politics. But
they're robbing a living, them lot.
Oh, mate.
Oh, yeah, well done. The biggest news stories of the last 15 years in politics.
Fuck off, mate.
Wait until someone boring gets in. Yeah. Let's see how you do.
Let's see how your ratings go under 5 years of Keir Starmer.
Economic stability? Oh, yeah, who wants to listen to that? No one, Campbell. Get back in your fucking box, mate. Spin that, you prick.
He's shitting himself about Liz Truss leaving and being replaced by Rishi Sunak. Sunak v Starmer. Try and spin 3 podcasts a week out of that, mate.
Just 2 men with really conservative ideas. They're safe ideas.
What was it?
I'm fine about it.
Fine. Yeah, you can sell out the London Palladium if you want to do a small venue. But fair enough.
if you like to be intimate.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
So
she went on a bit late.
But the atmosphere before she came on was like, you know, before a headliner comes on at a festival, like the crackle of excitement.
Well, I saw a photo. It looked amazing in there. There was loads of kids. It looked like a hot ticket.
Yeah, it was a bit of a hot ticket. It was a fucking boiling room, I tell you.
It looked hot.
Yeah, and we had to open some windows and you're like, how many kids on a first floor? We can't really open the windows here.
And then
we had 12 till 4 in the function room. And then they put an area of the bar aside for us.
Really?
Yes.
So you stayed in there?
Stayed in the pub till 6.
Did you get drunk?
I got drunk later in the evening.
So
I had a couple of drinks.
So I was texting you the night before on our little WhatsApp group with me, you, Rose and Lou.
Yeah.
And you was all excited about it, couldn't sleep.
I was so excited.
Yeah.
I get so excited for these things, I can't sleep, so I have to have a drink the night before. And now, today, I feel quite sad it's over.
Oh, that's good. That's nice. Yeah,
but it's like I used to with Christmas or with anything I look forward to.
But at least you're not chasing the high. You're not, you know, going to random children's birthdays.
I am going to one this afternoon.
Are you?
Not a random one.
No, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
But you're not chasing the high.
No.
That's fine. But you're not Monday going to start going up to kids and go, is it your birthday?
No, can we go
to a pub?
No. But, oh, man, I love a kid's birthday, Rob.
But you messaged at about 11 when Rose said, oh, the buggy's broken, and you had to fix it.
Yeah, it's unfixable.
So you couldn't take the buggy?
You can push it, but it feels like one of the wheels is... There's something wrong. It feels like, you know, when you push a buggy through like sand
the worst.
So it feels like, you know,
buggy on a beach.
Yeah.
Buggy, I'm so happy that I don't know. Buggy on the beach is fucking hell.
Oh, yeah.
It's like an SAS chase.
Yeah. So Our buggy feels like it's on a constant beach, and I don't know why. There's something like...
That's a good TV show.
Buggy on a beach?
No, SAS Parenting. And we get loads of 20-somethings off reality TV.
Yeah.
That have sort of like, not settled down now, got a partner, not having kids yet.
Yeah.
And they do challenges, what it would be like to look after a baby. So we load them up with stuff and say, all right, okay, go and set up on the beach over there, and you're in charge of that child, and then just let like children near them.
That is a good idea,
but
actually.
That was consent from the parents.
Yeah, 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 of course. Are you going to give your child over to
her? Oh, I'll be happy with that. I don't mind, you know, Tom Zanetti trying to... He's already got a kid, that won't work. Just trying to... Amber Gill. From Love Island, and Millie from Love Island.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Trying to look after my kids.
Yeah, fine. Anyway.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
like,
sorry.
It sounds like a weird sort of, like, lose left me fantasy, and I end up with someone from Love Island.
That would be a weird celeb couple. Oh. If Lou left you and you started to become like a celeb dater, that would be...
Well, because that would be so... horrible.
Oh, it'd be so cringe.
You're just like, we're doing that. Yeah. So what you been up to this week? And they're like, I'm pictured falling out of the Groucho with some random... It's Holly from Geordie Shore, actually.
Oh my God. How was your week? Yeah, I introduced Holly to my daughters.
Where was you? Time and envy in Newcastle City Centre. Anyway, so I feel a bit mad.
That's right.
I'm all jazzed up.
So I'm quite hungover.
Buggy's broken through sand. You're hungover because you stayed in the pub.
No, not because we stayed in the pub. So then I went, I took my son home, put him to bed.
Yep.
And then while he was falling asleep, because we were leaving Rose's mum, but I wanted to check he was asleep.
So you had a night out after, you had the party in the day, went, yep, stayed in the pub for a couple of hours, went back, got the kids to sleep.
Well, no, just my son.
Right.
And then I put him to sleep.
Yeah.
While he was falling asleep, made myself quite a large gin and tonic and watched Tottenham versus Everton.
Oh, good. Which a bit boring, that game, though, wasn't it?
Well, when you see as little football as me, it's such a barren desert wasteland, you take anything.
Fair enough.
And then I went back to the parents' house, one of the parents' houses.
Oh, for an after party.
Where our daughters were playing.
But Rose's mum had the baby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, toddler.
Yeah.
Oh, that's... And then you stayed there.
Oh, God.
What time did you leave?
I don't know, really.
What, with your daughter?
Well, Rose was... Because I took him back, then Rose was the more responsible one in the evening.
Okay. So you got loose.
I got quite loose.
Did you read the book out loud to anyone? That's what you've been known for in the past.
No,
you
didn't read the book
out. You get drunk and you just start going, hi, everyone. I know we're having a great time, but I'm going to read you a passage from my book that I think's great.
No, I didn't do that. I've only done that once in my life.
That, looking back, that was mad.
I'd say... There's a lot of things that I've done in the last couple of years that I've put to tape in this podcast where I think I don't like that person.
And looking back now, real big warning signs that something's not settled.
Yeah, in many ways. Narratively, this podcast has only been going one way.
I think, really, if you are up to speed on the Rob Beckett, the Josh Widdicombe that we are now, the old episodes make a lot of sense.
They make a lot of sense, yeah.
It's like a sociology study.
And I've got a terrible feeling in a year's time we'll look back on this.
God, Rob was really oddly obsessed with pubic hair in that Rachel Paris episode. I got a bit drunk last night.
Oh, go on.
Well, Lou was out with the kids and staying at a mate's house.
In on your own?
In on my own. So I was in the doors on my own. I was sorting. I had loads of stuff to sort out, like boring life admin stuff that I haven't been doing because we've been loads of PR. So I had a day of admin and then sort of watched football. Then I went to the pub with some mates and sat and had a few drinks.
Oh.
I had two beers and then I had five rum and gingers.
Oh!
And got in at 1 a.m. It's late, isn't it?
Nice.
This has happened. Basically, I've been really healthy. I've been eating really healthy, having these sort of protein shake things, and it's going really well. And I've not, so my stomach. So I feel really good because I've not had any all weird food. Yeah. Anyway, this pub did like burgers and wings and all that, and I've really overindulged because I've been good all week.
Yeah.
And it got to a point in the evening about 10 o'clock that I was in pain. My body was aching, and I was like, I'm going to go home. I feel terrible. Then I did 5 burps and 4 farts. And then I stayed out for 3 more hours.
Did you do them at the table? Or did you go to the toilet? And
I went to the toilet.
Yeah.
I didn't.
You didn't?
I did a bit of the table.
Yeah, yeah. Nice.
And how in a sort of laddy, grokey way. Yeah, here up, lads.
Those 9 things that you did, how many minutes did that cover?
I'm saying in a 5-minute period, I went from I'm going home to who wants another one?
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I was like, it felt like I was a balloon being let down. You know, like, it was like a hot air balloon landing.
Yeah.
You know that?
Yeah.
I do that.
Yeah,
to land
yeah. It. Oh, nice.
So that was good.
That's good.
Oh, but I haven't told
you. Oh, I should say. Go on. On the hangover thing.
Yeah.
I've just done Sunday brunch hangover. Oh, that was.
Of hard work?
Well. You must have done Sunday brunch before, right?
Yes, I have. It's a long, long day.
But I wasn't on for quite a lot of it.
No,
so I was on for the first two bits, and then they were like, you've got an hour off now. And you're like, I've got nothing to do with it. I might as well be on the show.
Also, as well, I'm like, as a comedian, I think, I do a 90-minute show that people pay for and enjoy, and then they've come back since I've done a number of tours. I'd say, get me involved. I can make this, you know, chickpea soup a bit more exciting. I back myself to bring the lols. We're making a chickpea soup,
yeah.
Let me get involved.
Get this. My cocktail drinking bit was directly before my interview to promote the book. I was like, well, I can't get hammered on the cocktails now. I'm about to do my bit.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it, being a parent? Oh, yeah, I've been fed food, got driven here, and I've had three cocktails. But, yeah, parenting is hell. Tough gig. Oh, I need to tell you about this. You love a gig going wrong story.
Yes, please.
So I had a gig last this week for a it's this new, I won't name the company, but it's a streaming company based in Scandinavia that's moving to the UK.
Yeah.
And it was, they had a big meeting and it was like launching it next year. And they're really successful, sort of like a Netflix competitor kind of thing. And they had doing a show called like The Best of British. So it was in London, in a hotel in London, but they'd got everyone from all their offices around the world. But it was like, but mainly they're Poland and Sweden,
it's already
Norway,
be difficult to do stand-up.
Finland, blah blah blah. They're all
in a theatre.
No, in like a function room of like. So they've had them. They've had conferences all day. They're sitting down for a slap-up meal, and it's me, and then they've got a singer later. But it's Best of British, right?
Who's the singer?
They had a Spice Girl.
Okay.
Very excited. So I'm going on first. And so I go out and I meet the big boss, lovely bloke, most Swedish, massive Swedish man I've ever seen, perfect English, chatting, and then and a really fun company. And then I go out to do it and I say, hello, is it going all right? And as I've said that, I was like, that's not English. Because they're all Scandinavian, so they can speak fluent English, but I'm not really speaking fluent English.
Oh,
mate.
Oh, God.
I was like, hello, how's it going? You're all right? And I'm like, if you actually break that down and you're Swedish and you're trying to translate that, hello, how's it going? You're all right?
And I was like, did it get?
Silence. As they trying to work out what this garbled mess is. And then I was like, okay. And then I start doing a few bits, and then as I'm doing it, I'm sort of like, right. And then I'm like, I've realised you speak fluent English, but you've not, I don't think a lot of you, because they're all sort of like high up in this company, have met an English person that sounds like me. Because if you're high up in corporate, the English people you meet don't sound like me.
Yeah, of course.
So anyway, I slow down. Just slow down and enunciate. So I start doing that and it gets better, right? Yeah. And I'm struggling a bit. And then at one point I just go, then I'm panicking. And then I went, isn't Haaland good at football? Gets a laugh because I'm sort of like, going, oh, I don't know, you know, trying to bridge.
Yeah.
But the problem is, I slow down. So they're getting me now. So it's, I'm like, right, I'm getting a bit head of steam here. But then I realise every joke I do has got really British references in.
Of course.
So
has,
like, I've got Centre Parks, Philip Schofield, the Wombles.
Yeah. Oh,
and a room full of people from, they don't know the Wombles.
No, try and explain Philip Schofield to a Swede. There's a lot to
there's a lot to unpack.
There's a lot to dig into.
Right, let's start with a gopher. Call to the gopher. It all starts there.
I'm going to take you on a hell of a journey here.
Anyway, so what happens now is, I'm doing it and all my punchlines aren't getting laughs because they've got no idea what they are. And it's horrible. So I'm doing it. I'm sort of laughing to myself. I said to him, I feel like I'm driving along the road and ahead of me, I can just see cars that are on fire. And they're my punchlines for the joke. And
God.
And then I sort of get them on side because I sort of make a point of it. All of the staff around the edge are English, who sort of know I am, and are laughing because the stuff's good, and laughing even more that I'm doing it to people that have given me nothing.
Oh, mate.
And at one point, the bloke gets his phone out to film and went, fuck off, mate, put that away. I've got to look my kids in the eye when I get home. Oh. And then basically, it builds and builds, and then I do a bit about Lake Bled and how nice lakes are to loads of Scandinavians and mountains. I'm like, oh, my God. And then I said, there's a line in a bit where I go, it's horrible, isn't it, when people are laughing at you in another language? Yeah. And I went, not that I'd know tonight.
Oh, God.
And then, but every time it died, I went, isn't Haaland good at football?
Oh, God. How long did you have to do? 20
30 minutes.
30? Oh, my word.
Oh, Oh my god. So I'm doing it, and then but then I got them, by then they were on my side because they're just aware that it was just cultural references.
Yeah.
And then I said, isn't Haaland good at football again? And I said, anyway, we've done this now, and thank you. And I just wanted to let you know that you are moving into the British market, and I just wanted to curate my set to replicate the challenges you will face moving from Scandinavia to the UK. And I was just, and I went off, and it was fine, but I was just like, that. And honestly, a few years ago, that would have been the biggest death of all time to absolute silence. But
yeah.
I didn't allow myself to beat myself. You know, do is you go, you're crap, you know, the negative. Now I've not got such a negative voice. I was like, this is what it is. So now just be in the moment and try and navigate around it. And it was a lot easier, but oh God.
When I panic in those situations, I'm straight into the audience. Talk to someone in the front row, say something far too harsh.
Oh yeah, Kevin. Make it worse. He got that. Kevin got that. Here he is, Kevin. And then I just looked at him.
What are you, wanker?
Yeah. No, he didn't chew it.
It's literally, that's
real. He had red socks. I know what it is, Kevin. Red sock wanker.
Oh, God. We've all been there.
Poor Kevin. Kevin. If you're listening, Kevin, I'm sorry, but I had nothing.
But I was panicking.
Is it Haaland good at football?
Oh, God.
He is good at football, to be fair.
I've got an incredible story.
Yeah, go on.
That is perfect for this podcast. Let me just find the text. So this didn't happen to me.
Right. Okay?
But you know the 50-year-old French woman that I'm friends with?
Yeah, go on.
So, happened to her husband. She was going to bed.
Yep.
She took half a sleeping pill because... she took half a sleeping pill because her husband was coming back late and he was going to wake her up.
Right, okay.
Anyway. then she's kind of drifting in and out of sleep and she thinks there's someone being attacked in the street outside. No. Yeah, there's a woman screaming. She looks outside. She eventually realises... it's someone giving birth on the pavement.
Oh, my God. Where's this?
Outside the front of her house.
In East London?
Clapton.
Oh, it's like Victorian London. Woman on the floor.
So, anyway, her husband comes home from with her teenage son. And they come in and her teenage son's like...
How late is he getting back?
They've been to BMX.
Oh, they've been BMXing.
Yeah, right.
That late night accident.
Yeah, exactly. Floodlit BMX. Oh,
here we go. It's 4 a.m. We better knock it on the head, son. Let's do a few more ollies next week, boy. Can't be grinding at 4 a.m, 3 a.m, sure. Let's get back and see Mum.
Isn't ollie? That's a skateboarding,
that's
isn't
my
it?
Best impression of a French man.
Yeah. Anyway, they walk in, teenage son, very unimpressed, like, Mum, there's someone giving birth on the pavement outside. Anyway, they offer her help. She's like, no. And then she's still screaming. So the husband goes back out. And he's like, you sure you don't want help? Do you want me to drive you to hospital?
Yeah.
Anyway, cut a long story short, hospital's 5 minutes away.
Yeah.
But she gives birth in the back of his car.
Oh, no. What car's he got?
Oh, covered in blood. as my friend said, lucky he's a butcher, so it didn't really...
Oh, my, there's too much to take in it. So is he a butcher?
Yeah. So he's fine with, like, the blood and stuff.
How's mother and baby?
They're fine.
Are they?
They're fine. So he took them to the hospital.
Yeah.
He said he cried. They all cried in the car because of the emotion of it.
Oh, what did they name the child? Nissan Qashqai.
The child is called George, I think. But there we go. Isn't that an incredible story?
That is.
How would you cope with that?
I would do what they did, but I might have been more forceful, wordy doors to go, I just think...
They were waiting for someone to take them.
Right.
Who didn't show or something.
Oh, my God.
Like the granddad or something.
Right, okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
But I think they did the right thing.
If someone gave birth in your car, do you think you'd keep a cool head?
Depends on the car.
Red sock wanker, would you say?
I've got a new car, so I don't want to put them in that one. It's electric. I don't know.
It's not going to ruin the electrics.
Well, I don't know. I've never had it happen.
No.
But I'd probably put some towels down.
Yeah.
And then take them. But I think I'd have just gone, right, we're going, and just been quite forceful.
Can you imagine what a thing to do?
Oh, actually, you know what? I might just shut the door and go to bed. That's the other half of that sleeping tablet. And fucking woman won't shut up. Fuck off. Just fucking plan better.
Imagine 5 minutes in a car. That's such a... How do you... Considering...
No wonder you go there a lot if it's only 5 minutes.
What?
The hospital. That was funny on the Nihal interview we did.
Oh, he was... We've done a lot of promo interviews for the books.
Yeah.
What are your favourites been?
I like Ni Hao because
Ni Hao was great, wasn't he?
You were talking about how often you go to A&E and you've been there quite a lot.
Yeah.
And then Ni Hao was going, they're under a lot of pressure, actually, the NHS. You shouldn't be going that much, in a jokey way.
Yeah.
And then they went straight to the news and the headline was, NHS announces the longest waiting time in 17 years.
God, it was awful.
It was bad. Because that show gets proper serious, yeah. That Five Live one.
Oh, he was great though, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was
still good. One of my favourite.
One of the faves. Oh, I don't know if I tell you this, where... So I was, I didn't see the kids all day Sunday last week, because I was working.
Yeah.
And then, because I normally see them on the weekend. And then on the Monday morning, I woke up at like 7:30 to sort of see, wave them off for school. And then I'd been off with them like loads over the summer and stuff as well. And then my daughter went, Dad. I was like, yeah. She went, we never see you. And I was like, I went, oh, I was only working all day yesterday. Like, and I was with them on Saturday. Yeah, I took them out all day Saturday.
Yeah.
I took you out all day Saturday, and I just worked yesterday, and I'm here now. And you've been sleeping in all morning, 7:30 a.m. And then just left the house.
Oh God,
brutal.
That would be brutal. Did you take it personally?
No, I was like, do you know what? I would have a couple of years ago, but I was like,
fuck you, fuck off.
Fucking hurry up.
Hurry up.
Get a move on. Right, do you want some correspondence? I've got a boomer story.
Yep.
Hi, I both love the podcast. Helps keep me sane through maternity leave. We grew up on a farm, and when my brother was about 5, this is a boomer, about 5, we went to build a container to
Barack
store...
Boomer.
If anyone's got any parenting stories about Barack Obama for our new feature, Barack a Boomer. Let us know.
I'd love her.
Got a Barack Obama anecdote.
Sasha, and I can't remember the name of the other kid.
I've actually seen him, Barack Obama.
Have you?
In Berlin by accident.
What do you mean?
I was in Berlin and he drove past. It was like weird, like.
Was he president at the time?
Yeah, in that big thing, you know, the beast.
Yeah, the beast, yeah.
Yeah, and then it was like, oh, that's a bit weird, isn't it? And I saw him. I was like, oh, yeah. And then we went into the park. He did that thing where he was doing a world tour. No, I think he was trying to be president. I'm not sure.
Right,
well, he was doing a world tour of big cities.
Yeah.
And he gave a speech in Berlin. So I watched
him. I remember that speech. Yeah,
so I watched him give that speech in Berlin.
Oh, wow, you were there?
Yeah, by accident. We were just going to the park.
Amazing.
And I had a like a Casio watch that the alarm was set for like 3 o'clock every day, but I forgot to turn it on. And I had my big travelling backpack, because we were travelling around on the trains. And it was in the middle of my backpack, and it started going, beep, beep. And it was like absolute bomb threat alert. I was like, no, it's just my watch. Everyone's moving away from me.
Oh my God.
That was awful. Anyway.
If we got Michelle on.
Michelle Obama.
Yeah, would you say, is Barack a boomer?
I would slip it in. And what's the point?
Do you think you'd get away with it?
This is like, I feel like I'm in year 9. You went, if you actually got to have sex with Kelly Brook, what would you do?
I love the fact that our now equivalent of having sex with Kelly Brook is interviewing Michelle Obama about parenting.
Oh dear.
Michelle, I've got to ask, is Barack a boomer?
Barack a boomer. Anyway, so when they're about 5, went to build a container to store animal feed about 3 metres by 3 metres. My dad took me to one side and told me to go along with his story. About halfway through building this box, my brother asked why we were building this. My dad replied with a complete straight face, because you've been misbehaving, so we have to let you stay here for a whilst the rest of us live in the family house until you're a good boy.
Oh my God.
So... He was 5 when he got told this. My brother went quiet for the rest of the time we built it. We finished and my dad told him to get in, and the rest of us went round the corner so we could hear him crying.
Oh my God.
Obviously we went back quite quickly, but the poor boy was distraught. Not sure what's worse, the fact my dad said this or if I went along with it.
Oh my God, that's like a psychological test.
It's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
I remember when I was probably about 7 or 8, my cousins... We was in like a family holiday, and I was sat with my cousins watching a film. And then, oh, Rob, can you go and get something from the other place? And they went, all right. So I went and got it. And then I come out, my like cousin was like 18, jumped out on me behind a tree and scared the living shit out of me.
Oh, God.
And he thought it was really funny. It was just an awful thing to do. Don't see them anymore. A horrible side of the family. You can leave that in.
This episode is brought to you by O2.
Josh, what would you say is the most important thing over the festive period?
Oh, it's spending quality time and catching up with family and loved ones.
One of the best ways to connect for less this Christmas is with O2. Check out savings across a great range of handsets and devices.
Mate, I've just had a look and you can save up to £500 on the Samsung Galaxy S22 Ultra. Connect for less this Christmas with O2.
Visit the O2 website or in store.
This episode is brought to you by National Rail. Joshua?
Yes, Rob?
Now, you're a man who loves a train journey.
Oh, yes, please. It is absolutely the best way to travel. Give me a nice long train journey with a book or podcast over driving or flying any day of the week.
To be fair, after having quite horrific journeys in a car on half term and on tour, I'm coming round to your love of a train journey. The M25 is a cruel mistress.
I love it, mate. I went on a stag do recently. One of the highlights, 6 different train journeys in one weekend.
Look, I will admit, when I'm gigging around the UK, or visiting friends and family, the train can be the most enjoyable way to travel.
It's such a great way to travel, especially if you want to connect with people and places you love. There are so many benefits of travelling by train across Britain.
Get closer to the people, places and things you love by train. Nothing beats being there. Josh, we also have an announcement this week, don't we?
We do. As of today, we have an announcement, Rob. We've decided to do another book. No, we haven't.
We are getting married.
My
We've
wife
left
would
Rose.
Leave us if I decided to do. Leave us? That's a one. Oh, dear. Oh, that's a worry. That's no, a real so worry.
The announcement is, Josh.
We're so bad at it now. That is the what? Like.
Yeah, but you're awkward at all this kind of stuff. Should I do the announcement?
I don't.
Okay,
like it.
So.
Yeah, you do the announcement. I'll just keep interrupting you.
The announcement is from the 8th of November. This podcast will be moving to Spotify and will be exclusive on Spotify, still for free, but you have to listen.
Still for free, that's the key,
exactly.
Isn't it?
So you just have to listen to it from the Spotify app. You can just download it like any other app and listen to this podcast for free. Same episodes on Tuesday and Friday. Nothing's changing apart from you have to listen to it through the Spotify app for free. So that's happening from the 8th of November. It won't be on Apple ones or the other ones or whatever they are.
If you're worried we're going to like go all professional.
No.
You're worried that we're going to... Oh, my word. No, no, no. No, no, no,
they know
no,
what
no.
They're letting themselves in for.
Things that will still be happening.
Go on.
Me and Rob talking over each other.
Are you going to buy new headphones now we're on Spotify?
No, me using ship headphones. Michael's Wi-Fi going down, so the Friday episode going up at 3 p.m. All these things, you can. We'll still be doing them. We'll still be doing them. You go. Because that's what I was about to say.
You do it then, because this shows how slick we are. Go do what you were going to do, and then do something.
Is this bit staying in? This is unbelievable. As if to prove nothing's changing.
This is the announcement.
Is this still the announcement?
This
oh
is
my
the
God.
Pre-agreed script we've been sent.
I can't believe that Spotify have dictated every single word of this.
It took 15 people to write this to make it feel authentic. But the reason we're moving is...
Oh, you're
podcast,
doing it now, are you?
Okay, I'll do it now, yeah. Or you doing it, I'll do it. Well, the reason we're moving over to Spotify is the podcast takes up a lot of time and a lot of organisation, a lot of logistics to do, and we were finding it very difficult to do. But by moving to Spotify, we can prioritise it and make sure that it's the
we're
main thing
we're binning off
do.
Some other less important things. We're binning off... Some other less important things.
So that's our announcement done, Josh.
I thought we nailed it, Rob. Now, Rob, it's a big day. As a little treat for our listeners, we've got a guest on Tuesday, and he's a guest we were very excited about, Gary Neville. It's a special Tuesday episode. And why do our listeners deserve that treat, Rob?
Well, because they have, well, not helped us. They've got us on their own, nothing to do with us, to number one in the book charts.
Number one! We're Sunday Times number one bestseller,
Rob. We are the number one book sold in the UK was Parenting Hell, so thank you so much. And a big thank you...
Hardback non-fiction.
Hardback, shut up, don't get bogged down by that. Forget Richard Osman exists! But genuinely, thank you so much. We really appreciate you buying
number
the book.
One.
Number one in the charts.
We're
number one bestselling authors. It's like John Grisham and Patterson.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We really do appreciate it, and we're really proud of the book, and the audio book as well. Has sold brilliantly, so thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much, genuinely. And
as a treat,
we look forward to the news next week that we're still number one.
Well, fingers crossed. Well, not.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, or not. If we don't mention it next week, then we're angry with you. We're still number
no,
one.
No, we're not angry with them. We're very grateful. We'll always be very grateful, Josh.
Yeah, we'll always be very grateful. We'll always be grateful for this.
Right, and now...
Once we've done 4 weeks at number one.
Josh, stop.
I've got a taste for it, Rob. I've got a taste for it.
This is what makes you burn out. That taste. You've got to calm down.
Someone get me some mouthwash. I've got a taste for it.
Okay, you can be... You could be number one and sad, or number six and happy.
Okay, I'll take number one and sad, please.
Right, brilliant guest we got now. He managed to squeeze us into a busy schedule.
We were so excited about this, but do you know who was more excited? As you'll find out in the interview, my wife.
Yes. Here is England's greatest ever right back, Gary Neville.
Gary Neville, welcome to Parenting Hell. We're both very excited to have you on this, to be honest. We don't, you know, we don't want to big you up too much. We're big fans.
Starstruck.
There aren't many of them.
Well, Josh genuinely is.
Not just me. My wife is so jealous. She's the world's biggest Gary Neville fan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is this from Man United, like from the start?
No. Well, I'll be honest with you. It's from Monday Night Football. She's not even that into football, but she absolutely loves you and, to a lesser extent, Jamie Carragher, but mainly you.
I was just going to say, what did she think of the Scouser?
No, she's not that fast. And she's not that into football, but I'll put it on. But she also, now I've converted her to Gary Neville's soccer box as well. She loves it. Anything Gary Neville based. She's obsessed.
Have you found you've got a new female fan since the after playing career, Gary? Because I never had you down as a heartthrob while you played.
No, I don't think many people have ever had me down as a heartthrob. Yeah, I think... it's fair to say not many. No, I don't think I've got a feel. I mean, I'm not exactly David Beckham.
No.
She's not into David Beckham, Gary. It's all about you.
Is she not?
No.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, right. I was thinking then there must be a reason behind her interest in me. It must be access to Bex or something like that. Or... There's no way it can be genuine.
She said, has he got a number for Phil Neville? That's what she said.
Well, you must have had that, though. When you were, like, playing at Man United, did you feel like sometimes you were just people's route to Beckham when you was out and about with David?
I spent most of my life at United, definitely, if it was ever even... Well, there was the media days or if there was a team day out. I certainly wasn't the point of interest when you got Beckham, Cristiano Ronaldo and all the rest of the lads sort of, like, you know, wandering around. No, but I think I actually enjoyed that in some ways. That actually informed my early days on Sky. When you look at me on my early days on Sky, I mean, I look a right mess. I've got the hairs, and I actually played on it a little bit because I actually didn't like the idea of being, you know, this. I didn't like the idea of being groomed or styled, and there was all this style advice that they tried to give, and I almost resented it and resisted until I realised that actually I think I do look a bit of a mess here, and I need to sort myself out. So I actually then decided to bring in a hairdresser, so I'd have my hair cut now.
Well, no,
professionally in London.
There is that clip of you when you're a bit nervous when you first started, when you asking one of the managers if they've
Mancini.
Ever... Mancini, that one. And that, yeah, you do look a bit... But that is, it is when you first make that step from being a player to a pundit, it must be quite stressful. But we've got to start talking about your kids in a minute. Or this is
I know,
two blokes
I know.
Talking to a footballer.
I'm Roberto. I never thought you'd be speaking to me. That was my first question ever to a manager. I'm like, well, how I ever kept the gig, I'll never know.
Loads of livid Man City fans want to know about formation. Going, oh, you never thought you'd speak to me.
Sorry, we should, you know, briefly take it onto topic and then we'll go back to the questions we actually want to ask. So, Gary, I know this because I follow you on Instagram and I've seen your family on holiday. That was creepy. What's your family setup, Gary?
Married with two children, both girls, 12 and 13.
Oh, okay. So you're going into the hardcore teenage years. Are you nervous or is it going all right?
No, do you know something? It actually annoys me a little bit because you meet all the way through the different stages of being a parent, even before children are born, they'll say, oh, your life will change. You know, you'll get no sleep. And then you get them to twos. It's the terrible twos. Now you get into that phase, aren't you? And then you get to fives. Like, oh, they're going to school and that's difficult. And you know something, I have to say this, and maybe it's because of my approach, and maybe, to be fair, my wife feels slightly different than I do. But honestly, for me, my relationship with my girls, I almost feel like, obviously I'm the dad and, you know, they're my daughters, but I almost feel like in some ways it's a friendship whereby nothing that they can do really bugs me or annoys me. I don't get angry with them anymore. I don't get angry with them at all, actually. And I was, because I don't see them all the time, because I'm away quite a bit with obviously doing the football. And I was with England, obviously, as a coach. And I used to go to World Cups for a month. I actually appreciate my time with them. And I've never found any stage yet so far of their lives where I've thought, oh, I don't like this. And even now I can see the fact that you know, I can see there's makeup has started to be introduced and there's an influence of, say, social media platforms. And I'm like, no, I want them to get really good at social media. And in terms of sort of the makeup and the changing of appearances and wanting to wear dresses or wanting to wear things that, you know, teenage girls wear, I'm thinking, well, was this always not going to be the case that they were going to grow up and that they were going to want to go through this phase? So I actually feel, I don't know, I feel quite good about my relationship with the children and I don't feel as though I'm daunted by what's coming, to be fair.
That is.
I'm a naive. Does that sound like a naive?
No, it doesn't. I like it. It
sounds like you've got it together, which might be quite hard going for the next 45 minutes if you've nailed everything there is to do with parenting. But we'll find a way.
Did you, I see you as a kind of authority figure. That's how I'd see you as a parent. Would that be fair to say?
Honestly, never in a million. My relationship at home with my children is the one relationship, I think, probably in my life where, with my wife as well, where I'm not the authority figure. I've always felt as though, obviously, even on Sky, you speak with authority and you feel, you know, you speak with a determination. At home, honestly, I am nothing like that. Absolutely the opposite. Because to be honest, when I go home, I don't take my professional life home with me, and I never have. So there's no football paintings around the house. There's no football shirts. There's no reference to, you know, my career or anything. I always wanted to get away from my professional life at home. And so I see it completely differently. And I'm not like that at home at all. So, for instance, tonight, I've been away for a week. I went to Singapore and then I've been in London and still in London now. And I go home tonight. And my eldest daughter said that she wanted to go around to my mum's tonight, which I thought was a little bit disrespectful personally. Because I've been away for a week. And I'm like, well, do you not want to see me? And I think if I was being an authority, I say, I've not seen you for a week. I want you to stay at home with me. But I've said, no, that's what she wants to do. Go on, you're an independent thinking, you know, young person. Go for it. You go and spend another night away from me if you want. But the youngest daughter's staying at home because she's got a little bit, to be fair, she's a little bit nicer than my older one. my older one's a bit like me. I love her to death, but she's a little bit sort of, she has the sort of blinkers on, quite focused, and she knows what she wants, and she wants to go to my mum's, so she goes to my mum's.
Oh, so a week away and she's round the nan's house.
Yeah, she's round the nan's and she probably likes being with my mum more than she likes being with me because my mum looks after her and, you know, they'll watch netball games together and she'll give her what she wants food-wise and things like that. And, yeah, just like nans do, really.
And with the girls, I've seen it on your Instagram where you almost feel like the annoying younger brother to them, where you're filming them and winding them up. Is that your sort of role with them? You're not, you know, you say you don't take your work home and you're not the authority figure.
No, that is what you see, to be fair, on Instagram is pretty much how I am at home with them in terms of just trying to joke with them, laugh with them, you know. I suppose, yeah, it is a little bit like that. And I embarrass them enormously. And I always thought that, well, we all think we're quite cool dads, don't we? Yeah. And we can't, that's the one thing I can't quite work out. Why are they so embarrassed about me? Am I not a cool dad? And I think every dad that I've spoke to feels the same. But we're all an embarrassment to our children, aren't we, at this point in their lives? And I find that a little bit difficult at times, as, you know. I think the friends quite like when they come around. But what I do, so I definitely am one of those parents that I encourage sleepovers. So they've had loads of sleepovers. We even took the friends on holiday with us in the summer for 5-6 days. Even though they're quite young, I just feel like I want them to be able to be around the friends, bring them round. And I find that when they're in the house and with the friends, they definitely will not be in the same room as I am. They want to be in a different room, whatever room that is. I mean, I could move from room to room. I think they'd actually prefer to be in sort of like, you know, the boiler cupboard than be in the room that I'm in.
So, because they are just too young to remember you as a footballer, or do they just remember the end of
They remember me as the guy who played 600 matches and only scored 7 goals, which is a great embarrassment.
Yeah. So they bring up your lesser credits then, would you say, to your face with that? Would they say
they
that?
They do, to be fair, criticise me heavily. And also, you know, even on television and stuff like that, if they see me, which is probably rare, they do say things that, you know, isn't particularly pleasant. That is the relationship I have with them. It's quite direct and honest and forthright. I don't, you know, I like it that way. I think it feels to me more natural. Obviously, there are times when, you know, we are dad and daughters and stuff. Yeah. But generally, I think my relationship with them, I quite like it. I feel like could become my best friends in a few years and we could go out and have a drink together and stuff like that. And that's how I always wanted it. It's how my dad's relationship was with my sister, yeah. whereby they used to go out drinking together at the end. You know, when my sister grew up, they'd go out and they'd drink together and like come back at 3 a.m. I think, amazing. That's mad, that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You mean, but then that's the relationship that my sister had with my dad. And I feel I might have that type of relationship with them at some point, that I might sort of, they might, yeah, come back that way. But yeah, that's how it's been for me with them.
Would we? And you're a very driven person, like you're like famously so. And how much do you try and instill that in your children, or are you just letting them find out things for themselves, or how much are you putting your kind of Gary Neville attitude into the house?
There are certain things that, to be fair, I think are really important. So if we're on holiday, or if they train for netball 4 or 5 times a week and play 2 games yeah. a weekend, so they're working really hard on the fitness and the sport. But if we're on holiday, I do expect them to train with me and us.
Yeah,
I expect that. I don't like the idea of them not being active. So I think things like in the morning, get yourselves up, get yourselves ready. You know, go downstairs, make your own breakfast. Because at the end of the day, if you want to be independent and do what you want to do, like go to my nan's tonight.
Yeah.
Well, hang on a minute. Don't turn into the sort of little baby in the morning and say, go and get me this, go and get me that. So, you know, they make their own breakfast in the morning. They obviously get themselves ready now. They're 12 and 13, so they can do. But I expect them to actually be adults in that way as well.
What time are you getting up on holiday? Are you getting up early?
No. I'd let them sleep in, but I'd expect them that they would come and train and that they would, you know, work on the fitness and because they love netball, they adore it, and it's a big part of it, and it's what my sister does. She trains in the morning. We all train in the morning. We get up and we train. And so I expect them to do that, because I think, one, that is a really good... I think sport and fitness are the two things that are probably, in some ways, maybe... And I don't have to be, because they love it and they do it themselves. So there's no, yeah. there's no sort of what would be, I have to say, do this, do that. There's nothing like that. But I think sport is a brilliant... If you have a sporty upbringing, I think it's something that can be really good for you in a number of different ways. Physical health, mental health, learning about success, learning about failure, learning about being in a team, working with people. You're all equal on a court. It doesn't matter what religion you are, what colour of skin, you know, where you were born. It equalises everybody, a sports team. And I like the idea of that. For me, that's what sport does when you're younger. You're all together. You're in it together. And I like the idea of that. So that's the one thing that I think I would be really against if he said to me, I want to give up playing netball, which they won't, because they love it like you wouldn't believe. And then the fitness side of it's really important, I think, in life, just generally.
Were you, for people that don't know, obviously, you and Phil played football for England and Man United and you know, and Everton. And and your sister...
We erased that part of our life. Yeah. Only joking, Everton fans. Only joking.
It's too late, Gary.
Yeah.
Your sister played netball for England. So was it a really sporting household that you grew up in? Like, and did that come from your parents?
It did. My mum, believe it or not, I've told part of the story about my daughter tonight. My mum plays netball every Monday night, and she's... Okay, we're at my mum's age now. She's 71, I think. Or
oh,
60.
Wow.
Yeah, she's 71. And believe it or not, my daughter is actually 13. She's playing in my mum's netball team, and she's played for the last 2 weeks.
Incredible.
And they're playing netball. They're actually playing netball together.
Oh,
and
that's
actually, I haven't been to watch them yet, but I actually think it's amazing
yeah.
that my mum at 71 is playing with my daughter who's 13. And that's part of the reason she wants to go tonight, and then she'll sleep over.
Yeah.
But I could not stop my daughter going there tonight to have that experience yeah. of playing with my mum and how my mum was yeah. with Tracy when she was younger, and they were playing netball together and rounders together. So we've always been brought up in this sporting environment of you play netball, you play rounders, you play cricket. My dad played cricket. We watch football or play football. So it has been a massive influence on our lives. And obviously my mum and dad worked at Bury Football Club for 20, 30 years as well. So we've always been surrounded by sport. So, yeah, I think that's where the influence comes from. And I suppose my sister actually is probably, if you said to my two daughters, who's your hero? They would say my sister,
yeah.
I would think.
Do you find it easier having daughters that are into netball than if you had a son that was playing football and in academies? Would it be exactly the same?
He could be in the Man City Academy at this moment, Gary.
I think generally because of just my life in terms of sort of what would be doing the football at weekends, for obviously on the television, and me not being able to be there quite a lot of weekends because of covering the games, I think it's just worked perfectly for me. Them, they have no choice about it. They are two girls. But I think the fact that they do play netball, I go and watch them every time that I can.
Yeah.
At a weekend, I absolutely love it. Netball's my second sport now, I would say. It used to be cricket, but I'd say netball now is... if England are playing netball, I know they were playing this weekend, I'll be watching it. I love watching England netball. I love watching Manchester Thunder. I love watching my daughters play netball. So for me, that sporting environment's just been really important to us, I think. And it influences everything in our lives that we do, I think, in some ways.
And do you find it difficult with your schedule? Because as well as the sort of punditry, you've got the overlap, which is amazing, the YouTube series, you're taking that on tour. I think you're doing, is it Wembley Arena you're doing with Carragher and Roy Keane? Is that coming up?
Yeah, we're doing November 10th, we're doing Wembley Arena. Me, Roy, Cara, Josh Denzel and Kelly Cates. And yeah, I think to be fair, I wanted 2 years ago, 3 years ago maybe, I wanted to build my own non-life sports platform.
Yeah.
And had this aspiration to do it. About long form interview, engaging with fans in authentic sort of type of content. And then I always wanted to take it live onto a stage. Yeah. And so we did that in Manchester last Christmas and we all enjoyed it. So we're going to do it again. We're going to do London, Wembley Arena, November 10th.
And out of Carragher and Roy Keane, who would you prefer as your dad?
I think definitely Roy Keane. I mean,
would you?
I think so. I mean, imagine that accent 24 hours a day. I mean, I go on Monday night football, and I've got him in my ear for like 6 hours, and I come away at night, and oh, God, that was hard work. Everything's really fast, isn't it? Everything's fast. And it's like, and to me, I don't need fast in my life. So to me, no, I must have a brilliant relationship with him, but no, definitely I would think Roy Keane.
He looks a lot on Instagram. He looks like a really fun dad. His Instagram's really fun. He's messing around with his kids. Have you seen this? Like, he looks like a fun dad, Roy Keane.
I think that everybody that's in the public eye, you know, they're not the same person as you think they are, right? Ordinarily, are they at home? They're different than they obviously are in their professional life or working life or media life. And I think Roy's probably one of the greatest examples of that in terms of, you know, he'll come to watch Salford or he'll be at a Sky game or, you know, he'll be at ITV in the World Cup, and charming, storyteller, funny, still with that same honesty that you see on television, but completely different in terms of a character. I think people have seen that a few times, obviously, since he finished playing football. You know, the interview I did with him for the Oval at the dog walk, which I think that, you know, people see that side of him in that long, that conversation type element of just what he is. And I think, I think he'd be a good dad. His kids obviously have a great relationship with him.
The Paul Scholes interview was amazing as well, especially when he's talking about his son who suffers with autism.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of listeners that sort of, you know, love as much content about that as possible, but there's not much out there. We've spoken to a few, Paddy McGuinness has been on and talking about his kids, but it was really good, especially for Paul Scholes, who's one of those sort of old school blokes that doesn't open up much. And you've known him for years. Did you find that quite sort of shocking how much he opened up to you, or was you expecting it and you had a chat beforehand?
Yeah, there were things within the interview, even though I sat next to him in the dressing room for 15 years at United, and I would class him as, you know, one of the people that I've liked most in my life. But because it's that male thing, isn't it? You don't tend to talk to each other when you're with each other about your vulnerabilities, your potential, how you're feeling that day. You put that mask on, don't you? You get into that changing room or you go onto a television programme and you do your job and you never know what's happening sometimes. You know, I think that the reality of it is, Paul, that day, there are a couple of things I actually felt a little bit sort of, I suppose, guilty on my side as well. So things like whereby you don't ask him about, for instance, what he's enjoying doing. And I found out he's been doing the recruitment for Salford with the recruitment team for the last 6 months. And I obviously oversee that from a point. And I'd not even asked him whether he was enjoying it, whether he liked it. So I found out on the overlap interview that it was something that he was really enjoying. And the first thing he'd enjoyed since we finished playing football, that's bad from me, because we just take each other for granted in terms of our, you know, we just get on with life, don't we? You go for a drink or you go to do something or you go to watch a game of football. And you don't tend to go into that personal detail that with each other that you really should do. But that's that's just, I think, adults, it's certainly men, who find it very difficult to open up and talk about their vulnerabilities.
This episode is brought to you by O2.
Josh, what would you say is the most important thing over the festive period?
Oh, it's spending quality time and catching up with family and loved ones.
One of the best ways to connect for less this Christmas is with O2. Check out savings across a great range of handsets and devices.
Mate, I've just had a look and you can save up to £500 on the Samsung Galaxy S22 Ultra. Connect for less this Christmas with O2.
Visit the O2 website or in store.
Hello, Laura Whitmore.
Hello, Ian Sterling. The perfect night in, how does that look for you?
For me, sofa, couple of cans, and a true crime documentary.
Am I included in this perfect night in?
You're in that as well.
We love a true crime. So much so, we started a podcast, Partners in Crime. Every week, we tell each other the most bizarre crime stories that we know.
Like that one about the shark that helped solve a crime.
And my story about an entire town that got away with murder.
Crazy.
So join us for Partners in Crime.
Every Thursday, only on Spotify.
When you're in the dressing room and there's like all those footballers around, and often like there were footballers that are having kids at that time and stuff, does it come up much? Like, is David Beckham going, bloody hell, I'm having a nightmare with Brooklyn, is not sleeping through or whatever? Does that come up
no,
at all?
Because obviously at the time, you know, I would maybe speak to David about, say, for instance, maybe things like that. But do you know something? If you're at Manchester United, you're playing under Sir Alex Ferguson. You've got to win a Premier League title. You don't come in and talk about basically, you know, how much your kid slept last night. No, you don't, honestly. Yeah. I mean, what I'm saying to you is you're going in there to get your pre-activation done, you're stretching, you're warming up, you're going out onto that training pitch to basically give 100%, kick basically shit out of each other for an hour and a half, which is what we did. Yeah. Come back in, warm down, have a massage, rest. And the fact of the matter is the focus is always the Saturday game. Right. That's not to say we didn't enjoy ourselves. Yeah. But the idea that you would come in and talk about a personal issue in a group environment of a football changing room, honestly, that is just not going to happen.
Obviously, that it was successful, though. You was amazing and you won everything. But is there a world when if you could open up a bit more, like with, you know, Paul and talking about his son, and that you could understand what was, you know, because he said he didn't play well in games and your head wasn't in it, that if you did open up, that would have helped players play better?
I think yes. I think you're right. I think that, I mean, I lost my confidence for about 6 months, went to see a psychologist at United because I went to see the doctor. What footballers will tend to do is go and see the doctor at the club. That's the person they trust the most to open up to. They don't go to the manager, their coaches. They don't go to their fellow teammates because you're feeling that you've got to protect. You can't go, if you go to the manager or the coaches, or the, I'm not saying you couldn't do, you could. That wasn't a door that was closed. It's just that you wouldn't do that because you thought that might then influence team selection, or you thought that that might influence the way in which the teammates thought of you. So you tended to keep things to yourself and you tended to speak to maybe the person that you trusted, which was the doctor that, you know, has medical confidentiality. And then the doctor would put you into a psychiatrist, psychologist. They would then open up that counselling line to you. And I then didn't speak about that. That was at 24 I was when that happened to me. And I didn't speak about that until I was 36 in my book. I just thought it was a weakness.
That was very early, like in that stage of talking about mental health. I know you didn't wasn't public with it, but to do that at 24 is very switched on of you to address it.
Yeah, and yet Paul had all these really serious issues in his life that he was thinking about. He told me in the interview. Yet he told me that he never went to see anybody. He just kept them bottled up to himself, and he thought, well, I've just got to get on with it. I've got to get over it. You know, that's it. It's just that's. You know, the saying 20 years ago, it was man up, wasn't it? You know what I mean? It was, you'd even say it to yourself. Come on, pull yourself together, man up. You know, that's what you'd say to each other. You know, get on with it. If anybody, no one cried in a changing room at Manchester United. 20 years later, we know a lot more. We understand a lot more. We accept that people aren't in good places all the time. And ultimately, we have to make sure that we deal with these vulnerabilities and put the support systems in and around players, and obviously not just in players, but people in businesses in all walks of life.
So how, you know, you're so busy at the moment, you do all the punditry, the overlap, live shows, as well as running numerous businesses that aren't all football based. You've got, you know, loads of stuff going on. And, you know, the football club that you own and run, and there's people like relying on you for their wages. How do you like compartmentalise that? And when do you sometimes have to speak to people when you're feeling a bit overwhelmed? Or how do you cope with all that and then still getting home to be dad and husband? How do you manage it all?
I mean, I think I've changed quite a bit in the last 2 or 3 years. So I always train in the morning now, which I stopped doing after I finished playing football, and I put weight on and I felt terrible, and I was drinking wine. I found wine, obviously, after football, yeah. Which you do. When you were younger, you're like 25, and you say, you hear these sort of like people talking about, oh, red wine, what red wine do you want? Do you want a Bordeaux or do you want a Burgundy? You think, what assholes these lot are, these posh assholes. that basically are talking about this red wine like it's some sort of like vintage, unbelievable thing. Anyway, then you find yourself 36, 37, sort of swirling it around the glass. You're a Bordeaux. And you join them, and then you find cheese goes with it, don't you? And red meat. And all of a sudden, you start feeling really shit. And I did do. Yeah, I have a really strict regime now where I train in the morning and I try to get home by 5:30, 6 when I'm in Manchester and I'm in the office. And then at 6 till 9, 10 o'clock, is where I switch off, and I've started to do that a lot more, and I feel as though that sort of routine has helped me now in terms of sort of just, you know, bringing back sort of that normality into my life. I was when I first finished playing football, I was England coach, working for Sky, doing all the businesses, away all the time, and to be fair, it was just absolutely ridiculous. It's still a little bit ridiculous now, but I do feel this great responsibility to be an employer, someone who has, you know, people who obviously work with them in the teams, and it is an obligation that I feel is the most serious that I have, obviously with family, but the fact that we have 400, 500, 600 people in our businesses in Manchester, and they're all relying upon me and on us to make sure that those businesses are sound and solid, and I do feel it's a responsibility that all business owners have. And but I think we do it pretty well, to be honest with you. I think we look after our teams. I think we make sure they're good. But it does bring that bit of added pressure. One of the worst things in the world is having to sack someone, you know. And that's something that still, you know, in football clubs, I've had to do it, and I've made mistakes with it. You know, there are still those difficult conversations to have.
I've been trying to get rid of Josh. Have you got any tips?
Just do it really quickly.
Gary, what are you doing next week? I need a new presenter.
One of the things you did post-football was you went and managed in Spain, in Valencia. Did you take your...
You're going out in a blaze of glory in your last show, Josh.
It took you 20 minutes, Josh. Well done.
I mean, I'm interested.
I didn't know you managed there. How did that go?
You've asked me a few questions about my kids to make it clear. You've gone down the Valencia route.
No, I'm bringing it back to kids because I think this is an interesting thing for kids, because you obviously were a one-club man, but footballers move around and they have to move their family around and stuff. Did you move your family out to Spain? And if it had gone on for years, were you planning on moving your daughters out to Spain?
No. So basically, one of my pet
hates... about Valencia. It wasn't about...
You're covering it in a sort of roundabout way, aren't you?
The answer is they were on the way, but he got sacked, so they just turned around at the airport and come straight home.
Gary, you got sacked after 4 months. It was a pretty appalling performance. But how were your kids there?
Yeah. Did you make them watch it? Were they sad?
Yeah. To be honest with you, it was probably the best thing that ever happened to them, me getting sacked, because they wanted to come home. But on a serious note, it was probably the toughest 4 months, definitely the toughest 4 months I've had since I finished playing football. Because, one, the children didn't settle in the school.
Yeah.
But I was really intent on, what I hate is when managers, coaches, players take a big step in football and then they try and do it without committing to a city, to a club. And it was really important to me that Emma and, you know, Molly and Sophie, they came out with me the first day I went out there, and they left the day that I left. They had Spanish lessons. We had Spanish lessons 4 times a week. We put them in an English-speaking Spanish school. And you know something? One of the great regrets I have, other than the results and not doing the job that I wanted for the owners in Valencia, is that I actually would have loved to have been a success for 2 years. Not because I wanted to actually increase or extend my managerial career or coaching career, because I was doing this particularly not as a favour, but it was definitely something I wouldn't have done if I hadn't known the owners. I really, like, for instance, Philip was out there for 2 years. Harvey and Isabella, his 2 children, speak fluent Spanish, as does Julie.
Right.
And that's something brilliant that I think that you could have, I could have had if I'd been out there. But to be fair, I think I've told this story before, that I only learned a few words. I think concentration, which was concentración.
Yeah. Adios.
I think that's my key word out there for 4 months. Vamos. Yeah. Vamos and concentración.
The last couple of questions. Josh is going to do the final one. I've got one quick one before we do that. Your kids are getting a bit older now. That, you know, at 16 they can start working. You obviously got a great work ethic, and you've made a lot of yourself. Built this empire now. Do you expect them to be working straight off at 16, or, you know, because there is a worry that they've got this lifestyle now that you've built that they could, you know, take the foot off the gas.
That is never ever going to happen. They're not. Honestly, no word of a lie. They know that the one thing that I expect, it's the simple thing really from everybody that I work with, my children. You know, you get up every single day, you work as hard as you can, and you don't give in, and you come back the day after. They're the only sort of three guidelines I think that I ever want to live by. Because I think that once you've done that, you really can't do anything more than that. So the idea that they think they could get up in the morning and say, "Oh, I don't want to go to school today," or "I'm going to miss my netball training," or I'm not going to work hard when I leave school because I think you might have a bit of money, Dad. That is absolutely going to be that's going to be a divorce in our relationship. I feel quite harsh. Now, I know it's never going to happen because I think that the values that we put into them is that they get up and they work hard. They're independent thinking. They make their own decisions. But you've got to turn up. It's really simple. Just for Alex Ferguson, even if we had a team night out when we were playing, I don't care what time you come in tonight, but tomorrow you turn up, and you have to turn up in life. And the reality of it is, if they don't do that, they've lost everything in their working and professional lives, and then you lose respect. So no, they have to do that.
Would you prefer your daughter to come home and say she was now a Man City fan, or she's now got a job working for Boris Johnson?
Oh my God! Knowing how my post football career has gone in terms of Liverpool and City, it'll probably be both. I would say, to be fair, I'd rather. They'll never support City. And to be fair, they won't ever support someone like Boris Johnson either, because, like I say, I think
as they get older, they might become conservatives. Everyone gets a bit more right wing as they're older, Gary.
I don't think in my family that will happen to them. what I'm saying to you is they were stuck in with me for that 2 years or 12 months during COVID, watching the clown every night at 5 o'clock. They saw enough of him themselves.
And the final questions, Gary, that we ask everyone this. With your partner, your wife, what are the two things, well, the one thing that annoys you the way she parents, and the other thing, what's the best thing about her as a parent?
The one thing that annoys me about the way in which Emma parents the children. I can't win here, can I? I mean, I've just been away for 7 days, and I'm actually now doing a criticism and a critique on a massive podcast of my wife. I mean, that is going to go down really well. What's the one thing? I don't know. I think all mums maybe worry a bit too much, don't they? But just a natural worry and instinct to sort of concern themselves with. I hope they're okay there. Will they be okay going to that event? Or, for instance, our youngest went to Alton Towers yesterday. And so there'll be a worry about, but you just have to let them fly from the nest, don't you? You have to let them go. So I think it's not a criticism, but I would say probably a little bit of worries too much, but it comes from love and a good place. And what's the best thing? Do you know something? It's like my mum. To me, she's the best person that I've ever met in my life. It's unconditional. She would put us in front of anything, my mum. And I know Emma would do exactly the same for the children. She would put the children in front of anything and anyone at any time.
But to be fair, your mum has poached your daughter for a netball game rather than your daughter seeing you. So she's put her granddaughter before her son tonight.
Oh, she has, and she would do that regularly. I'm the most unpopular figure in my own family.
And in Liverpool.
Oh, I'm in Liverpool, yeah.
And Valencia.
Gary, your November 10th, the Overlap Live at Wembley Arena. Can you tell us anything about the show?
It's going to be conversational, I think, because of the three characters that you've got on stage, and with obviously Kelly and Josh hosting. It'll be storytelling, it'll be football, it'll be life, it'll be stuff like this. It'll be seeing a different side to us. There's obviously... we're quite honest characters as well. So I think that we'll definitely make sure that we have a bit of a pop at one another. What I like about the sort of the overlap or sort of what we do, it feels to me like it's three football fans who used to play football in a pub having an argument and a row and a debate and sometimes an agreement. And that's how I think the overlap is. It's that authentic content, but with people who played the game. And I think that that's what I wanted to do with it when I set it up a couple of years ago. So I think you'll see more of that, really.
You're doing everything. Is there anything left to be done? What's on the Gary Neville to-do list?
No, the one thing that I want to do when I'm 50, I don't like keep saying 50, it's 3 years away or 2.5 years away. I'd like to bring my life back to a single focus professionally.
Yeah.
Whereby I don't have these sort of different multiple roles, 7 or 8 roles in different, you know, the hotels, the football club, the development, Sky, the Oval. I'd rather, so that's my aim, is to somehow try and get to a fixed singular role where I can be laser focused every single day. But that's doesn't feel like it's coming soon, but that's how where I'd like to get to.
Managing Villarreal?
Oh, you're really going in on him now.
It was a joke. I spent the first 5 minutes telling him my wife fancied him. So I think
there's more chance of me being the leader of the Conservative Party than any football club in Spain employing me.
Can you give Rose a little shout out? What, your biggest fan, Gary?
Yeah, my wife Rose. What would you like?
Yes, hi Rose. Thank you very much for your support. It's something that I'm quite shocked and surprised by, but I'm gaining confidence from it. It's making me feel really good. Yeah.
Gary, thank you so much, mate.
You've been
thank you so
a joy
much.
To have
Enjoyed
you on.
That.
Thanks,
thank
Gary.
You.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you.
Cheers, mate.
There we go. What an absolute legend.
You was really overexcited, weren't you?
I just really love him.
I love him too.
And and I mean this, I hate Carragher, Manchester United team.
No, we might want Carragher on.
Yeah, I'd love Carragher on.
Me too. Great guy. I love
Great
him.
Guy.
Fuck
yeah,
Gary
yeah,
Neville.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We've got him. He's doing too much, I think. He's got an
shades
hotel.
Shades of Romesh.
Shades of Romesh. A lot of... They've both got a lot on.
They've both got a lot on.
Romesh is the Gary Neville of comedy. yeah, because I forget, like, he does, like, the overlap. He does Sky Sports. He's got his kids, his wife. And he's like, yeah, and then the hotel. I was like, what?
Yeah.
You've run a hotel.
Oh, mad, isn't it?
And a football club.
That's what happens if you attack the day. That's what he does. He attacks
the
day.
You know what? I don't think I want to attack the day.
No.
I'm too tired already. I'm sort of jabbing the day.
The day at arm's length.
I'm just keeping the day at distance. I'm happy with that. Are you attacking the day?
No. You're I haven't attacked the day in
you're
years.
You're smothered by it. Yeah. Duvet over your head. Yeah, little
exactly.
mouth out.
That problem, to go back on what we talked about earlier this week.
Yeah.
We had to have the headphones on to interview Gary Neville.
Yeah.
And my head was heating up. If we'd spoken to her any longer, I was in serious trouble.
Hot in here.
Yeah.
But we made it through. Gary Neville, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Bye.